Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner with your host, Jay Billis. Today, Jay welcomes sports psychologist Dr. Tiffany Jones, Philadelphia 76ers assistant coach Kevin Young, Minnesota Timberwolves assistant coach Brian Gates, and head coach at La Jolla County Day School and the Waves Basketball Club in California, Terry Bamford. Now, here is your host, Jay Billis.
Welcome to Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Our topic today is coaching each player uniquely. And we've got four really special guests with us today. I'd like to introduce each one of them and start off with Brian Gates, who's an assistant coach with the Minnesota Timberwolves of the NBA. He's coached in the D League and the USBL. He's also coached with the Sacramento Kings, the New Orleans Pelicans, and now with the T-Wolves. We've also got another NBA assistant coach, Kevin Young, who's an assistant coach with the Philadelphia 76ers, was a really good player. Clayton State also coached in the G League before moving to the bench for the Philadelphia 76ers. And we'd also like to welcome Dr. Tiffany Jones, who's a sports psychologist and with the United States Olympic Committee Sports Psychology and Mental Training Registry. She was an outstanding soccer player and a soccer coach in addition to being a sports psychologist. And last but not least, Terry Bamford, who's the head coach at La Jolla Country Day School, played at UC Irvine as a player and has won multiple Coach of the Year awards, including the Naismith High School Coach of the Year. And wanted to start off, you know, this is called coaching each player uniquely, which I guess presumes that each player is unique. But I want to start off with a quote that I heard from John Chaney years ago when I was covering Temple. I was at one of his practices. And he had said, there are 12 of them and one of me. It's their job to adjust to me, not my job to adjust to them. And I thought it was a funny way of saying it. But I want to start out with Dr. Tiffany Jones. And Dr. Tiff, you know, how do you look at player-coach relationships? And should a coach look to coach each player uniquely in order to get the point across, the teaching point, whatever it is? Is each player unique in that regard?
Well, I guess it depends whether or not that coach wants to win. So if they want to win and they want their players to play consistently in high level performance, then yes, you want to get to know each player. Every player has different experiences. I usually use a behavioral assessment called the athlete disc and coach disc a lot, which is just about behavior and what we see and how we like to be communicated with and motivated and our fears. And the more you can understand a player, the more you can help them reach their excellence, because there's different ways to communicate. They have different motivations. Some guys are like, just get the heck out of my way and give me the damn ball. And some athletes are like, no, I'm all about relationships and I want to play for my guys or for my girls. And so, and also developing mental skills. If you want to really help them develop their mental skills, the more specific you can get a mental skill, the more it's going to work. And that all ties into knowing that person, that player, that kid. And so, yeah, it's vital. Especially if you want to win.
Dr. Tiff, does that differ by level of play? In other words, would you have a different approach if you were a high school coach? And look, I'm older probably than everybody here, but when I was a young player, there was a lot of my way or the highway type of coaching. And you could say, you could argue that some of it was to the point of being demeaning. Does mindset of a coach, should it differ with regard to high school, college, pro, that kind of thing?
No, I mean, I would laugh. I'm like, unless you don't want to win. Today's kids are different. We're raising them differently, and there's less and less gender differences as well. And so, yeah, I mean, guys want relationships with their coaches as well as girls and women. And I think I used to be that way too. I was raised with like a tough dad, tough coaches, and you do what they say. And that worked. It's not going to work anymore. That military, like, hierarchical approach doesn't work. It's all about relationships. It's about understanding and valuing each person, especially letting them know that you care about them beyond basketball is going to be vital for their success and their comfort level and their ability to be vulnerable and then be mentally tough. And how, heck, I'm not like kumbaya here. Like, I'm all about, like, you want to win? This is key, period.
Terry, how have you seen that over the years as far as the change in approach or mindset of a coach? Have you seen it evolve?
I have. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've evolved a lot as a coach. I mean, both at the high school and the college level, I think what she said is so important. You have to build relationships first. The kids have to know that you love them, care about them as people beyond basketball, and they have to trust you. And once you build that, and you can coach them hard, you can get after them. And I think they really realize that, man, she really cares about me. She's really trying to just get me, you know, to where I need to be the best player that I can be. So I think it has evolved a lot, you know, since I first started coaching. Yeah. I think when I first started coaching, it was like my way or the highway type thing, you know, and as you grow, and learn, you know, it's been great establishing, you know, these relationships and trust within the team. And I think that's why we were so successful this year, that, you know, everyone trusted each other and, you know, everyone believed in winning was more important than, you know, self accolades. And, it was just a really fun season. Yeah. But
Do you coach your players differently? Maybe one player you treat differently than another. I mean, I've heard the phrase, and I'm sure we all have, that you know, I'm going to treat all of you fairly, but not all the same.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes. So you have to have certain standards, and mine is a big, you know, attitude, your effort in practice, and being a really good teammate. You know, treat each other the way you want to be treated. Those are non-negotiable, but each player's personality is different, you know? So I have a point guard that I can push. She wants to be coached. She doesn't take anything personal, so we can really get after it. And I have some players that are real sensitive, and they take what I say, you know, to heart. And I you know, you have to really kind of help them understand that this is just basketball. We're talking about basketball, not about you as a person. You know, this is just the round ball on the floor, the X's and O's. So yes, each player, I mean, their personalities are different and they are motivated in a different way.
Brian, how does that work in the NBA, the things that we've been talking about? Do you have to take a different mindset as an NBA coach in dealing with and teaching NBA players than you might as a college coach or as a high school coach?
I mean, yeah. I mean, at times, I mean, I think Coach just talked about it. You know, you for us, you know, we're able to coach Carl and push him. And I don't want to say call him out, but, you know, you point out his mistakes. He's so talented. Physically and very smart on the floor. And I think as you push him, kind of everybody else follows. But, you know, a big deal for us, and I even think Coach said it, you know, we had James Johnson. James is 32 years old. Then you have a 19 and 20-year-old in Naz Reid. And you're talking about a huge age gap. It's almost, you know, same as a senior to a freshman. And, you know, that's the biggest part for us is we find out from assistant coach's standpoint, you know, how do guys get taught? You know, is it video? Is it paper? Is it walking through on the court? And then you start doing that stuff, and you know, you'll do a little research with them about them before you meet them, and before, you know, we talk about getting our hands on guys and what that research will tell us. I mean, Coach talked about. I mean, Dr. Tiff talked about the disc. We actually did the disc as a staff during the quarantine. And we also do it with our players, and you have all that information beforehand. I think really the only time that you really try to treat everybody almost the same is just during practice. And then when you're one-on-one with guys and you know, you can't, there's some guys you can't yell at. And then there's some guys that want it, you know, they want quick, decisive, hey, this is A to B to C, and then you're done with and move on. And then there's some guys that you just kind of got to walk with them a little bit better. So, yeah, absolutely. But I do think for us, when you're, you know, your top level guys, when those guys buy into what you're trying to do, you know, it does help. Everybody else does follow a little bit.
Is that basically an example of if your best player allows himself or herself to be coached, you're going to have a better team, that kind of thing?
There's no question. I mean, Pop came out. I mean, everybody remembers the quote. You know, he said, "I'm a great coach because Tim Duncan allows me to be." And I think that falls. That was a while ago, but I think it still goes on today. And, you know, Carl does that for us.
Kevin, how do you determine when you're coaching new players what works best? You know, Brian had mentioned some players like to be jumped on right away. Other players you can't yell at. Is it a trial and error thing? Or do you try to sit down with the player before you ever get on the floor to determine, or at least try to determine what works best?
Yeah, I mean, I think the common theme I think we've all talked about is the relationship piece. And so it's hard to know how somebody wants to be talked to or treated if you don't have much relationship with them. So when we get new guys you know, you try to figure out how they're wired and how you do that. You spend time with them, you get sweat equity with them on the court, trying to get them better. And you build that base of, hey, look, I have your best interest in mind. And that can take a while. But once you get that, then I do think it becomes a little trial and error, because now you have a little bit of equity built in with them. You see how they interact with other coaches. You see how they interact with other teammates. And I think understanding people is a huge component in this, and how different people like to be talked to. I think of it as a parent. I have three young children, and I draw so many comparisons to coaching as I do to parenting. You know, I'm sure B. Gates has triplets. I'm sure he could give a whole a dissertation on this, as each triplet, I'm sure, is different. But for me, you know, you talk to one of your children a certain way, and maybe the other one you have to go love them up. It's no different in coaching. And that's really how I've been able to understand how to coach each guy different, is one, build a relationship with them; two, sit back and see how they are talked to and how they respond to that. And then that piece of trial and error kind of brings it all together.
Terry, when you have a play, say you have a player that doesn't respond well to you jumping them or kind of pointing things out in a pointed fashion, but yet other players respond well, better to that. Do you have to explain to the team that, hey, there's a reason why I'm not jumping on this one and I'm jumping on you? Because I could see some players saying, well, wait a minute, how come every time I make a mistake, I'm getting it, the other one's getting a pat on the back? How do you deal with that?
You know, I think when I'm coaching, you know, the intensity, or we're teaching something, I think I coach each player X's and O's the same. Their reaction is not the same. So, you know, one kid, you know, I got a coach, you know, I got it next time I got this. The next player I talked to, you know, you could see it in their body language, you know, their head drops and their eyes roll and like, what now, you know? So, I basically just stop practice and I just say, look, you got to understand, this is what we're trying to do. This is not personal. You know, so the whole team is here and that message delivered on a daily basis. And then, you know, after practice, maybe pull that player aside and talk to them like, hey, what was going on? Why are you taking this so personal? It's, you know, so just getting to know them, getting them to respond a little bit better to the level of intensity that we need to play at. If they don't respond in the right way, I make sure that I talk to them about this is what we're doing. But I'm not gonna not like jump on some player and not on the other player about certain aspects of the game. You know, we've got to hold some standard.
Dr. Tiff, I read Tony Dungy's book, and he had a remarkable line in there about coaching, that you can be demanding without being demeaning. Mm-hmm. What is the right mindset for a coach to have as far as being demanding, but making sure not to cross that line into sort of what I would call the old school norm? The old school norm when I was a kid, demeaning was part of the deal, and it is not anymore. And so where is that line, and how do you, what are the best practices to avoid that line?
I think it's clearly stating what your standards are every single what practice and what that looks like. And usually those are going to be in your control, and create an environment where we're constantly explaining that it's going to be uncomfortable. We want you to take risks. We want you to make mistakes. We want you're not going to execute all the time. But again, it's how you respond to that. And it's also, you can get on people about their behavior, but don't get on them about, hey, you're a lazy, you know what, because you just missed that tackle, or you didn't get that block, or you didn't get that rebound. It's like, hey, this is what you can do differently next time. Or if you think they are being lazy or they are doing something, you're acting lazy right now. What is going on? Not you are lazy human. And so it's really commenting on the behavior and not the person is a big switch in that. And it can take a lot of that demeaning out. But again, it's also understanding we forget what it's like to be a freaking athlete. How many kids are waking up going, I cannot wait to just mess coach up today by sucking? Like, or I can't wait for my parents to be pissed off. Like, no one's doing that in the NBA either. I can't wait, unless they're on the take, they're not sucking on purpose. So I always go back to, what is the reason why? And if you have that relationship, maybe you can get to that reason why. Because if we want to change behavior, you got to understand the why to change the mindset, to change the behavior, or else you're just slapping a Band-Aid on something. So,
Brian, is there a difference to you between a coach that motivates and inspires
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's, I think, you know, Dr. Tiff just said it, it's the why. I mean, the you know, terms get thrown out a lot, like, you know, like culture, everybody talks about culture, you know, the kind of the new thing now is your non-negotiables. Like, what are your non-negotiables? And I think those are getting put out there right at the beginning. There might be two or three of them, and then you're done. And then what Dr. Tiff said, it's your why, and then you get it. And, you know, I even just your different tones of how you talk to a guy. I mean, it's funny, Kev sitting here, it's a long time ago, we were battling in the D League, and his head coach, Brad Jones, is on Memphis. You guys remember James Lang, kind of a big play, real good high school player. He just was struggling in the game, and Brad called a timeout. He's just like, we need you right now. And it wasn't like what you're messing up. It's like, hey, you're not doing well now, but going forward, like, we need you to win this game right now. Like, we need you. And I think it's just, you know, you inspire somebody to come out of those timeouts, come out of a pregame, start a practice, all those things. And you know, and you, there's a lot of different ways you can say a statement, you know, and I think the moving forward and being positive about it, it's just, you know, like I think Dr. Tiff said, man, the times are changing, and coach talked about this too. Times are changing, players are changing. Not everybody's the same. And you know, don't, you know, if, you know, we all want to touch their minds in basketball, but don't forget about their hearts. If you touch a heart of a player, you know, they'll run through a wall for you. I mean, just, we're all a little bit older. We all had those drill sergeant coaches, but you know, think of your favorite three coaches going back. I mean, mine was my freshman coach, and he inspired me and wanted me to do well and wanted me to play well. And I mean, to this day, he's one of my favorite people and coach.
Well, you mentioned the top three, like who were the people that inspired you to coach the way you coach now and why?
Bobby Dye, Coach Dye was the first guy I really ever worked for. And he was the best at fundamentals. Like, he didn't understand why people didn't rebound with two hands, but he would just talk to you in a way, and going back to that thing. And, you know, coach is 5'8", maybe, you know, kind of shaved head. He has your haircut, Jay, and he just kind of would walk around. He had that graspy voice. He's like, if we just rebound with two hands, but you would just feel it. You would feel how, you know, he's very close to Chris. He coached Chris Childs at Boise State. It was just he just loved it. And then, you know, different coaches. I coached with a guy by Russ Bergman. You know, for me, Dave Yeager. A big one is Monty Williams. I spent 5 years with Monty. Kevin spent a year with him. He was so technically and so disciplined. It's like you just didn't want to disappoint him. And he was so disciplined. And, you know, he never swore. He never really raised his voice. But, he had that stature. And a big part that I always take from Monty, he was so prepared, guys just believed in whatever he said. I mean, if you know, we were playing somebody and they said, we're going to run out 5 point guards, we believe them, you know, and I think that's a big part of it too, is your preparation to earn that respect.
Kevin, who were your role models in becoming the coach you are, and how would you describe yourself as a coach?
Well, the reason I got into coaching was my high school coach, Roger Qualm, in the Atlanta suburbs. That was just a great man, and we clicked a lot on just the competitive level. We just had this fire of competing that I think we just really brought us together. And he had his father-in-law, Dick Helm, longtime NBA assistant, so coaching was in kind of his blood, and then I just kind of loved it from him. And the style, I think I kind of took a little bit from each coach that I played for as a player. I took a little small part of what they did that I liked, and then I adapted that into my own kind of philosophy and then how I kind of acted. And then the more I started to coach, as the levels went up, you know, you kind of imitate the people that you look up to, right? So then I'm watching NBA games and I'm looking at how, you know, guys – conduct themselves on the sidelines, where when B. Gates and I were in the minor leagues, you know, I was much younger and I was a little crazy, right? I just would get too emotional. I would get too emotional. And so I would try to tone that down, watching guys in the NBA who very, very even keeled, and try to work on my emotions from that standpoint. But in this discussion that we're having, Coach Brown, who I work for here, is he's just the most positive person that I've ever been around. Even in the years where the Sixers were struggling, winning 10 games a year, he was the most positive guy I'd ever been around. And even now when we're, you know, hopefully going to compete for a championship in this year's playoffs, that positivity remains there. And I love that about him. Something I wanted to touch on that I've learned a ton of from him about is this piece of coaching guys differently. And the new age player, right? We've got, you know, some of our best players are young. Ben Simmons is a young guy. Joel's still fairly young. And so, you know, he's almost 60 now, but he's FaceTiming guys, right? He's texting guys. You know, I wasn't even doing that back when I was, you know, in the G League as a head coach. And so there's so many different ways now to reach these players. You know, it's not always, hey, I'm going to talk to you in this drill and practice. It's, hey, I'm going to text you after practice to come meet me real quick, and we're going to talk in the office. Or I'm going to FaceTime you when I'm out on my run so we could connect in that way. So when I do actually have to really coach you, it's going to be a lot easier to do that. And he's been an absolute master at that, and that's something I really learned from him.
You know, Terry, we've talked a lot about coaching players, but as a high school coach, you have to coach parents too. And whether it's a high school coach, high school teacher, you know, everybody says they want parents involved until the parents get involved. But how do you deal with parents, and how do you essentially coach parents when you're dealing with players and teaching them differently?
So beginning of season, we have a meeting. We have a handbook that we give the parents. This is what our expectations are this season. This is what we expect from our players. This is what we expect from our parents. I think for me, the biggest like issue that comes up is just playing time. You know, I think we've got it down where we know how to treat players, we know how to coach players, you know, but the biggest problem I think is the playing time. And that's when the parents get most involved. And so for me, it's just about the truth, right? If you're not happy with the role you're in, then prepare for the role that you really want and be ready for it. And then having sit down conversations with parents, you know, our coaching staff is here for you. We'll get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. We'll stay after whatever we need to do to get, you know, your daughter to the level that we all want her to be. Why don't we work together? So the other thing with parents, I think sometimes they just need to unload. So I've learned over the years to just be quiet and let them unload and then kind of backtrack from there, you know, and try to win them over in the conversation by explaining, you know, certain things. But yeah, you do have to coach parents as well as kids, you know, in high school. I mean, and the youth, they're so involved, you know. So if we can help them be better parents, as, you know, I try to tell the parents that if your son or daughter makes a mistake and they didn't play well, it's not a sign of your parenting, you know. If they're having a temper tantrum and they're treating people bad, now that may be a sign of parenting. So maybe try to help them understand and put it in perspective.
You know, Terry, you'll hear all the time, coaches will say, well, only, you know, 2% of all high school players go on to play in college or something like that. And, you know, sort of the idea that you've got these low numbers, don't put all your eggs in the athletic basket, that type of thing. But when I hear that number, oftentimes I think, well, then as a high school coach, don't you have an obligation to make that a great experience for the players, because that may be their last stop in organized sports? Is that something that resonates with you? Sort of what do you feel your obligation is with your players?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I kind of built my philosophy going backwards, like what's the end result? So when a player finishes in my program and they move on to the next level or move on to the next chapter in their life, what do I want them to feel, experience? What was their experience like? You know, and for me, I want them to be able to feel like they had fun. They're, you know, they competed, they learned that we can remain friends for the rest of life. You know, we always say family for life. So that's the ultimate end. And then as you build your program, you know, I kind of went backwards, like how do I get to that point? So yeah, I think it's very, very important that the experience, and especially, you know, with girls, it is about, especially youth, right? It is about their experience that matters most, not the winning. Yeah.
Dr. Tiff, you mentioned before mental training, mental toughness. What are some of the methods that coaches can take advantage of with regard to building a better mental approach for their players and mental toughness, both on and off the court?
Well, I'm usually not someone who gets on here and then tries to sell myself, but we're doing a elite virtual mental skills camp for coaches, players, and parents starting next week. Bunch of pre-recording stuff and then having some athletes come on, pro athletes, to talk about different experiences. But I'm throwing everything out there that I use, because I don't think in my field, it's like, we don't want to tell the youth coaches because then we won't get business. So my thing is, it's about understanding mentality zones, like what happens when you get too frustrated or you get too amped, and what happens biomechanically to you, also cognitively. And it's like something that has really taken hold for pros, my college athletes, and especially my youth athletes. They can pick up on it right away. They're like, yeah, I'm in my red zone. Like, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, I'm upset, or I'm in my green zone, meaning I'm thinking about dinner, or I'm thinking about having to go home to my wife and kids, and oh my gosh. And so now I'm not locked in. So it's giving this language to understand first, where am I mentally? And then it's all about the fight. So it's recognizing, admitting, accepting, which zone am I in? And then do I have the ability and willingness to fight? And so it's teaching the youth coaches all these different skills that they can implement right into training. But I'm someone who's like, you know what, I'm just a teacher, and that you coaches are on the front lines and need to be armed with the hows. Like, how do you actually go about this? Yes, we know we want mental toughness, but how do you literally start with an 8, 10, 12 year old and start integrating this into your language? And so we give a ton of resources for coaches, but one of the biggest thing is honestly recognizing, admitting, accepting, where am I right now mentally? Where's my focus? And then giving the kids the tools to fight their way out of it, because that's mental toughness, is how do you fight?
And that's a totally different approach than just thinking about X's and O's and whether you're going to press to slow a team down or speed up. Mm-hmm. That sort of training requires some education on behalf of the coaching staff. Aside from your program and your teachings, what are some of the things that you think coaches can take advantage of to improve their skills in mental training and teaching better mental training to their teams?
Well, I think it's finding someone like me who's going to sit down and just give you all the tricks. And it's not just like going to a textbook and reading it and being like, now what? I don't think, again, we do a good enough job in my field to say, I'm just a teacher. Let me teach and let me give you skills and understanding the kids today. I think that's a big thing. I think reading a textbook is one thing and you're like, well, this is great, but I'm trying to manage a board of directors, club, parents. And so, yeah, I might get the kids to buy in, but how do I get the parents to buy in and my board members to buy in and understand what we're trying to do? Because if they see us 30 minutes of an hour practice working on something over under the trees or doing something that's not traditional basketball practice, like, I got to get everyone on page. So how do I even explain that to the team? How do I even get buy-in on the front end? So giving them the tools to do that. I think there's lots of reading materials. I mean, Jay, you wrote a great book, right? I think on the mental, did you?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a great book.
You're like surprised. I was like, I'm 99.9% sure I read this. So reading your book was amazing, but again, it's then layering in, how do you literally talk to a 12-year-old about this? And then how do you do this with your team? And again, that's why we did what we did with my company, because I'm like, enough is enough. Like, especially in today's day and age, we need to arm the youth coaches with these skills, and we need to be as specific as possible, even having a script to read to the kids. And so it's everything from confidence and focus and self-awareness and behavioral styles and understanding and getting them to better communicate, and then really developing mental skills and breath to focus and concentration to, again, coming up with all the different skills that you can fight to get into where you want to be, because you do have a choice on how you respond to the environment.
Boy, those are all such great points, and especially to have somebody that you can trust that's competent to come in and help you if possible. And let me start with Brian here, but I'd like each one of you, if you would, to give your best advice based on your experience in the game, your best advice that you would give to young coaches.
Be yourself, 100%. Be yourself, and be a great listener. I'm going to steal Adam Silver. Adam Silver talked to all the the coaches, all the assistant coaches on a call about. And Darvin Ham asked him, what have you learned through this? And he said, I've learned three things. I'm a great listener. I know how to say, I don't know. And I'm the right person to lead this association. Meaning like, I know what I'm doing, but I'm a really good listener and I don't know, but you know, and it really stuck, hit me like, hey, we're going through this, but also just in our coaching. Sometimes you don't have the answers, but you're prepared enough that you can do it. But you learn from your mistakes. I was a head coach in Beirut, Lebanon at 31 years old. And my trainer that had been there for 20 years just said, hey, be yourself. And I wasn't. I tried to kind of do what the norm was over there. I had an idea and I wanted to do it. The players bought in and somebody said it wouldn't work. And so I changed it and I got fired. And I'll always remember that. Be yourself. Know how to listen. And you're the right person for the job. If you get the job, you're the right person for the job. So be yourself.
Kevin, how about you?
You know, Coach Gates hit on it when he was talking about Monty Williams, who's a great man, and we both have obviously learned a lot from. Be prepared. That is a very deep thing when you're talking about any sport, but there's so many things that come up. Be prepared. You never want to get caught when you aren't ready to answer a question from a player or they feel like you don't know what you're doing. That is the biggest way to lose guys. And with that, if you don't know it, have the humility to say, you know what, I'm not sure about that, but I'm going to get an answer and I'm going to be very clear with you when I have that answer. I think being prepared and having a level of humility will take you a long way.
Terry, what's your best advice to young coaches?
You know, I'm a big energy, passion person. So when I go into practice or, you know, prepare for a game, I mean, that the energy level and the enthusiasm that you bring to the gym is really contagious. And also being able to listen and being able to see kids, their body language is, I feel like as coaches, if we can read the body language and we can help them, I think those are the three things that are most important.
Dr. Tiff?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the psychological, emotional, and social and spend more time on that when they're younger and not get caught up in the physical, technical, tactical. If you want the physical, technical, and tactical to stay, like to take hold, you got to work on the other things and build the foundation. And I wish we would allow our youth coaches to spend more time on that. And if the pro coaches and college coaches really wanted to make more money, they would be sending that message down to the youth because then they'll be better for them when they get them.
Well, that's a great point. And there's so many, you know, I think coaches forever have been looking for resources to improve their performance and be able to give more to the players. And it seems like today we've got more great resources than ever. And one of the best is eCoach. And I'm a subscriber, get the emails every day and look at all the drills. And Brian, I know that you've been active with eCoach and actually we're part of a great presentation on defending pin downs. We'll take a look at that right now.
Hi, I'm Brian Gates with the NBA Coach and eCoach. Today we are working on pin down defense. In basketball today, there's many actions that happen off the ball. One of the biggest things in transition or in a half court set is the quick pin down. What we are gonna be talking about is a meeting of three where we stunt off the ball and then the big also stunts on the flight of the ball. As we start here, Destiny is guarding the point guard, JoJo's guarding the big, and Peter's guarding the guard. Anytime a screen happens, now Jamal comes through it, we always want to wedge through the screen and our man, understanding that we're going to be at a deficit. When this happens and the pass happens, we will always stunt off the flight of the pass, and we will stunt off the ball to create a meeting of three, which will take away all gaps. Once the ball goes back to the big that set the screen, we're able to get back to bodies on bodies. Okay, start it off. Go ahead, as we walk through this, go ahead as we come off stunt, we have our meeting of three. The ball goes back to the screener, we come down for this side of the screen, ball comes up to the slot. Stop, now we have a new big, a new point guard, and a new guard coming off the screen. Here we go, come down and set the screen. We come off, react to the flight of the pass. We have our meeting of three. Great, the ball goes back to the screener, go back down. Now how we started, we have the big that started in the corner, the guard, and now the point guard becomes the screener. As we go down and we screen, we come off as we stunt. We stunt off the ball, we stunt off the flight of the pass, and we create our meeting of three. One of the reasons why we always want to stunt on the pass is so we don't create a lob dunk. You see this all the time in the NBA, especially with Golden State and with DeAndre Jordan from the Clippers going to the rim for a dunk. If we come off as we set the screen, and as he comes off, if Jamal tries to stunt too early as he comes off, that's a lob dunk for Peter, which he is behind us. It's one of the reasons why as we come off, we wait until the flight of the pass to create our meeting of three. As Cyrus recovers, Jamal can come back and recover for him. As much as off-ball screens happen today in the NBA, especially early in the shot clock, it is so important to have a great meeting of three.
You know, Brian, that's such an important point about waiting till the flight of the pass to stunt as well. But what a great resource eCoach is for young coaches, and whether it's coaches that are youth coaches, high school, college, NBA. I watch that all the time, get new drills from NBA coaches. It's just a great thing for any coach.
Yeah, Jay, I mean, what they do, it's unbelievable. That whole setup was a couple years ago at the Vegas Summer League. And I mean, I think they were there for seven or eight straight days, going from, you know, eight in the morning to about 10 at night, just anytime the coaches could get there. And, you know, I know Kev's staff has done a lot of them, and it's a great resource. I think you can type any kind of – you can type a coach. You can type an action, both offensively and defensively. You're on there. And you know, I can give anybody – Kev, if you play Portland, Terry Stotts put his whole offensive thumb-up series on there. So if you need to scout it, you can just play that in front of the Sixers, and you got your old scout tape too. So the Trailblazers offense is up there. It's great. I mean, it's – you know, we try to complicate things too much in the NBA. You know, as we're having this conversation, it's you know, we can talk about X's and O's to death, but I mean, what we really want to do is touch our players' hearts and get them to play hard for us. And you know, through this whole thing, if you gave coaches wishes, can we just talk more defensively? If we just have one, can we just talk more? Well, how can you get them to talk? Well, make them believe, you know, and make them believe in the team and yourself and all those good things. So, yeah, I mean, we're on eCoach a lot actually as a staff. So it's phenomenal.
Well, Kevin, you can not only type in an offense or a concept, but you can type in a coach. And Brett Brown has done such a great job on eCoach. I know you've helped him with those things and seen him do it, and have a lot of respect for the way he coaches the game.
Yeah, we're really involved in eCoach. Jim O'Brien on our staff is one of the main drivers as well on eCoach behind it. And what I like about it is you're able to go on there and you can just get ideas, whether it's the drill that Coach Gates just went through, and you don't even have to take the whole drill. You might just take one component of that drill and steal it and make it your own and put your spin on it, which is what most coaches do, right? We steal from other coaches, we make it our own. And so that's what I like about Coach Brown's steppers and huggers drill, is the point of the drill is to step into shots as opposed to hug the three-point line, and you're hugging kind of the line into your shot. We talk a lot about four-point line spacing in Sixers basketball. And so what I love about Coach Brown's drill of steppers and huggers is it's a great tool to teach your players on where you want them to space the floor from. And then, you know, you can do all the things the coach goes through in the drill in terms of getting downhill, stepping into your shot. But where I take from it, it's a great launching pad in terms of this is how we want to space the floor, as opposed to being hugged up on a three-point line. We want to be we want to be stepping into passes for, at the 4-point line. And that's how we use the home base of our spacing is really through the drill that coach goes to with the steppers and huggers drill.
Well, we want to end on this one that we've all had to suffer through COVID-19. It has been tragic for so many and difficult for everyone. But on the plus side, at least for me, I've gotten to eat some things that I haven't eaten in a long time. And so I've asked this question of a number of people. What have you been eating during the quarantine that you weren't eating before and maybe shouldn't have been eating? And when I asked Darvin Ham this, the first thing he said was, Doritos, and it says it very, very vociferously. So, Terry, let's start with you. What have you been eating?
You know, I'm pretty disciplined with my eating, but I think through the COVID thing, you know, maybe drinking the Coke or something like that, you know, get your energy level going. Or, but I'm pretty disciplined. I haven't gone on the binge yet.
Oh, you're no fun. I've been eating ice cream like it's going out of style. Holy cow. Now you made me feel even worse. Brian, how about you?
I mean, I'm a complete opposite. I mean, it's a gong show here at the Gates house. I mean, Kev said we have 9-year-old triplets. It's, I mean, when I was trying to be a third grade teacher, we taught fraction with ice cream bars. So now you got to do a sixth of a third. My wife and I are just sucking these ice cream bars down at 10 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, coach, we need to come to your house. Cause this is hot dogs with cheese and macaroni and cheese. We're not doing anything, but you get so tired. So anything a 9-year-old eats, we have inhaled during this time. So, but the ice cream bars, fractions very high on that list.
Yeah, I might start that, brush up on my fractions tonight after that. Yeah. Kevin, I know that before we got on the air, you were kind of outed that you've had this Grizzly Adams beard going and finally shaved. But what were you eating in addition to the beard growing?
It's funny that, and we didn't even talk about this beforehand, but these two actually do go hand in hand. I had the Grizzly Adams beard going. And what's funny is one of the reasons that I recently shaved is because of one of the things that we've been eating at our household nonstop is it's just been a smoothie bonanza, okay? And here's why. It's the only way I can sneak anything green into my kids' diet. So I'm throwing fruit in there, but I'm throwing a handful of spinach in there just so I can sleep well at night as a parent knowing my kids are getting the greens. But as I'm drinking the smoothie, I had the beard, and it would just get all in the beard. So I've got a huge green mustache and a blonde beard. It just got old, man. I had to just take it all off.
Dr. Tiff, you're going to get the last word on this one.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be no fun because I'm probably fitter than I ever was now. And so working out and doing yoga and doing all the things and eating pretty well, but also notice it's the two women that have to be disciplined. And you guys are like, whatever, because women, we have to be very careful. You guys, you're like, oh, I need to lose a few pounds. And 2 weeks later, you've lost 20 pounds, you know? So that's probably has more to do with it than anything. So,
you know, you just got to, you got to surrender to the elastic shorts and elastic sweats. They're great. I love them. They're great. But listen, thank you guys for being with us. And thanks for sharing all your wisdom about the game and beyond. Really, really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
For more coaching resources, including our curriculum, please visit juniornba.com. I want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach basketball video library to give our viewers an insider's perspective about how NBA coaches teach the topic we're focusing upon each week. For more information and to access the coaches video library, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Next week on the Junior NBA Coach's Corner, Jay welcomes NBA coach Kenny Atkinson, youth and amateur officiating development lead from NBA referee operations, Gary Zielinski, and the Junior NBA Coach of the Year from Phoenix Basketball in Amarillo, Texas, Keila Doru. Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Jay each week for the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. Go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.